Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy.
Hello, and today on the podcast, you've got Chantelle and I probably revisiting some ancient history and our relationship with goal setting for starters.
Yeah, it feels like ancient history,
but we're also going to give you some of the highlights of some of the things we're thinking about and discussing with our members as well around this idea of potentially the increased need to have really measurable goals and goal-driven programs to, I guess, really support clients' funding. Would that be the headline there, Chantelle?
Yes. I think the headline is it's coming whether you like it or not, so please start doing it.
Okay. Well, we could just go home now. Just before I hit record, Chantelle and I were talking about our past relationship with goals, and I had a bit of a love them or loathe them relationship. When I put the effort into, and just to get myself out of the rabbit hole here, this is, 14 years ago. I haven't practiced clinically for 12 years or so, 10 years or so. And this love-loathe thing, and sometimes some of the work that I was doing, it was really quite easy to work up the goal and it was really quite measurable, like a lot of the motor development and a lot of the handwriting, drawing, the participation in the classroom, I found all of that reasonably easy to goal up. But some of the other work around the parent coaching and building happiness and capacity in the family and extended family, that was much, much harder. And I don't know. I don't know who I should write and apologize to. Clearly, I didn't do a good job much of the time. But as a clinician nowadays, I reckon it's really quite different.
Yeah, I think we have. I think I have better awareness of what tools are available to help us do it as well. Certainly, when I was back in my days at Cerebral Palsy Alliance, was very goal directed. Services and support, that's where we were moving at the time, and outcome measurement came in as a part of that, so well ahead of their time in lots of ways, CPA. And yeah, I agree, it was a little bit of a struggle to build that in. It felt like more work, you were being asked to do more work, it felt like a box you had to tick in a sense. But as we said just before we click record, Kathy, when you remeasure in 3 months and realize that you've actually hit the mark, it's very satisfying for yourself as a clinician, but also for the families that you're supporting to see that their loved one is moving forward, and for the participant themselves, I suppose. Yeah,
it's that classic moment where you have a clinical gut. Maybe clinicians have this other gut that is like a clinical gut. Maybe there's two. Oh, that could explain a lot. You have this clinical sense that there's been progress and there's anecdotal evidence of the progress. Yeah. But I guess the goal setting is the data that backs that hunch up.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a crucial piece of day-to-day evidence-based practice. Mm. So you might not be basing your intervention choice on a therapy method or an intervention method that's been repeatedly proven in RCTs. Mm. To be a green light, absolute gold standard intervention. Sometimes we take those alternative routes, and we're pushed into that by clients who are clearly telling us in their own way that other way isn't working for them for whatever reason, and we have to get our innovative hats on, and that's what we're really fabulous at, let's face it. Yeah. So we have to measure that to demonstrate that we're still getting to the same endpoint, even though we haven't followed what the evidence is telling us we should be following. We have to have some way of measuring that this innovative practice is working for this person. And that's ethical, I think.
Yeah. We started at A, we did the process, we've arrived at B. How do we measure that bridging?
Yeah, I think it's, and then we're sort of building our own evidence base in doing that as well, which, you know, we all did a science degree, right? You know, at what point do we acknowledge that there's a heavy scientific aspect to the work that we do, and as a part of that, measurement is a fundamental part.
And increasingly, there is the tension there that some of the commercial success of the business might be sitting on this ability to prove that what you've done is working. What you're doing with the government's money is making the right amount of change for participants.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. That's the direction that we're seeing loud and clear now through recent documents that the government have put out that wish to have some evidence that taxpayer dollars are being spent well and achieving the outcomes that the people that are using those tax dollars for funding are wanting from their funding.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't, while I admit to everybody listening that it is a potential can of worms here, because we all know that humans being humans won't follow, you know, they won't go from A to B in a straight line. So this can be fraught with challenges. However, I understand from the government's perspective why they would like to see what they are getting for their money.
Mm. Do you think it will also help participants and other health consumers understand what the therapy is about?
Yes, I do. Absolutely think that. I think if we are clever about how we do this, easy English, framing things in ways that the community can understand, this is a wonderful way to demonstrate our value.
Mm.
We are very quiet about this, Kathy. We do not shout about how wonderful we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we get upset when government is saying, we're spending a lot of money on you. You know, why? Why are we doing that? So, well, because we're great at what we do. But how do we know that you're great at what you do?
Because you're, we tend to believe us.
Yeah, that's right.
Trust, what's that thing? Trust me, I'm your therapist.
Yes. Yes. So we are smart people who can take control of this very easily.
Yeah. All righty. So let's maybe stick to the list that we've got in front of us, because we're nowhere near it right now.
Help me out here, Kathy.
Over the while, in all sorts of different environments, I've heard about occupational therapy goals. And I sort of just sit there and I listen to that and my heart breaks just ever so slightly, because they're not occupational therapy goals. They're Charlie's goals or they're Simone's goals. And when I did write goals as a clinician, one thing I can pat myself on the back with is I always wrote them collaboratively, mm-hmm. and they were always really functional. So I never, oh, my God, what have I suppressed, Chantel? But I wasn't a therapist that, this is going to be like a session. I wasn't a therapist that wrote improved bilateral integration. I can hardly remember what that is. You know, I would have been a therapist that said manage two-handed play with these toys, with this sort of support. So this whole thing about them being collaborative with the client or with the client's decision makers and them being functional, like, I think it's back to the future with some of these basics.
Well, I really do think, and that's the way, how many times we've been around long enough, sadly, Kathy, to have seen the circles meet and start again. Certainly things do tend to go that way. And absolutely, if a goal is not, well, we know smart goals, right? So they have to be realistic and measurable and
specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, time-based.
That's right. And without setting that goal in collaboration with the person who's actually going to be doing the work, the client, I don't think we're meeting any of those SMART principles. And yes, I don't think it's about measuring, unless it's a very specific pre-post surgery kind of measurement. I don't think we're looking for added degrees of flexion.
Flash back to the goniometer.
Okay. I think we're looking for the person, yeah, to be able to use that limb in the way that they want to do the daily activity that they really want to do.
Yeah. I remember listening to Winnie Dunn and, a lot of people listening will know who Winnie Dunn is. And she was magnificent at many, many things. But one of the key moments I remember, I can still remember where I was, the university, the whole thing. And what she was able to do was explain how you write sensory-based goals into practical, into functional goals. So you're not improving tactile tolerance. The goal is that Charlie can walk on the beach with his family.
Absolutely.
Things like that. And she did such a good job at demystifying these previous very medical, medical kind of goals into lifestyle goals. So public shout out to her. She was just such a groundbreaker
at the time.
All right. So it's one thing to have these goals, and we've alluded to SMART goals, but there's a couple of extra letters that need to go on the end of SMART goals and to make them smarter. So if we add an E and an R, we evaluate them and you can either have review or reset. I tend to have reset because if you're reviewing them, you might have landed exactly on the goal, or you might have landed a bit above or below, or there may have been enough achievement that you can kind of go elsewhere with the program. And so the goals kind of get us started, but the program needs to sit on top of the goals.
Yes, absolutely. And you can't measure an outcome if you don't have a goal that you're measuring against. So it's absolutely fundamental to outcome measurement is really good goal setting. And I agree that evaluation and reset is almost always where we land. And I would suggest that this is part of your own learning. We often, when we first start really getting into good goal setting, and I'm talking about setting, I think two goals per block of whatever intervention that you are, any more than that is just not realistic and it's not fair, I don't think, on the person. So two goals is plenty, but it takes a while to get really good at writing those goals. So I think initially I would set them, almost sandbag them. I don't know if you do you use the term sandbagging. We use it in the gym a lot. It's where they say, like, when you do your first round and then make sure you match that for every round after. So if you sandbag your first round, you make it very achievable. And that's similar with the goals. You'd sort of sandbag the goal to make sure that you achieved it, which isn't really the point. So it's about being really ethical and honest in where you set that goal and whether you have some peer mentorship when you first start, just so that people are cross-checking your goals just in your learning process while you're figuring out how to write good goals. And then during that evaluation and reset process, that pretty much tells you whether you got your goals set in the right place to start with. So I like those extra two letters on the end there.
Yeah. What are the goal setting tools that you've come across?
Look, there's a few out there now, and certainly we had this discussion in one of our coaching zones recently, Kathy, with some of our fabulous members who are already using outcome measures and goal setting as part of their day-to-day work. I was trained on GAS, so goal attainment scaling. Well, that's really an outcome measure, but it helps you in that goal setting process because it's a staged system of setting goals. Outside of that, I would use good assessment tools to help with the goal setting. And I do love the COPM, even though I'm a speechy. by trade. But
that speaks to the strength of it. That's not a discipline-specific tool. That's a life-specific
tool. It's a life-specific tool. I really like it. I think it makes sense to families. And I think it makes the really easy self-rating scale. It's very easy to administer, and it really helps you drill down to get to the goal and make sure that that goal is appropriate. But people are telling me there's other ones out there. Is it OzToms? I think somebody's been talking about, and I'm not going to be able to think of it right off the top of my head right now. But in our blog that's coming out, I think we throw some links out there for people to have a look at. Yeah.
I remember enjoying a couple of tools from Autism Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little Google the other day when we were writing the blog to make sure they were still around. I used to use the family goal setting tool. Sure. And I guess the context is we worked with children and families and educators. And it was a pack of cards, and you literally worked through the cards and just started to play with what was important, what wasn't, and what you might want and what you didn't want. Because what it did was a familiar tool, right? So it wasn't overwhelming for me or anybody else for that matter. And it had a playfulness to it, and you could sort of just talk through some options. Because I remember speaking with, how can I describe this? The CEO of a very fabulous national advocacy group for children and families. And she looked me, and I was speaking with her when I was doing some research for my book, and she looked me in the eye and she said, "How many other 8-year-olds have goals?" And I said, "Oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. I'm schooled. Thank you. Thank you." And so the whole process of having to set goals, because you've got developmental or health or medical needs, is a really, really interesting one, possibly beyond our mere minds on a Friday morning. But to be able to the expectation that clients, kids, families, whoever, grown-ups walk in and know what they want, I just blows my mind. It's such an ask.
It's an ask, but I think it's also respectful to ask them.
But it's also okay for them to not know what.
It absolutely is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a real skill in facilitating goal setting in that group.
Yeah.
And then working with parents to make sure that what mum and dad might be suggesting is where the goal should be set is in line with where the child perhaps would like the goals to be set. Yeah, it's complicated in that small person world, and perhaps with a person with intellectual disability also, or a communication disability, where expressing those goals is tricky. So definitely can be a bit of an art form.
Yeah. So I found those cards really, really good. So the family goal setting tool, I think there's one more specifically, that doesn't make sense, more for autism, and there's one for just other sort of developmental delays as well. I found that really good. I never used the GAS. I was never trained in it. It was always just on the periphery when I was, and it's probably become more mainstream in the last 10 years or so, but it's pretty much the gold standard, one of the gold standard research tools, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. It takes a little bit of practice to sort of nail it down, but that's where my training sat. But I'm loving this idea of a concrete set of cards, like having something really concrete to hold and move around, and there's a real method in that. I like it.
And to be able to draw it and chat about it and think about it, and it sort of took the pressure off having to really nail the direction on the first date, if you like.
Absolutely.
And all sorts of things came up, and so with these cards there was bike riding and all sorts of play. It was play-based, which is what instantly caught my attention. And it sort of gave us the opportunity to kind of play in a few areas, if you like. And I'm just thinking one particular family, we got some really lovely quick wins is sort of what's coming to mind. But we were able to say, oh, yeah, that could be fun. I know someone who can help you with that, and we can get that sort of sidelined while we perhaps do some of the other stuff.
Yes. Yes. And that really enables child involvement in the process too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think I might be getting me some of those cards, Kathy.
Right. Well, yeah, better get in touch with Autism Queensland to expect a bit of a wave. It's also a reminder that sometimes really simple things can be really, really effective.
And I'm a big believer in the KISS method.
Yeah. Kathy. Less is more. Less is more.
Less is more.
Hey there. Okay, it's time for a breather. Did you know about our Allied Health Biz Quiz? This is not just any quiz. It's a roadmap to growth, tailored specifically for allied health business owners like you. Hundreds of business owners have taken our free quiz and received their own customized report. And if you have already, kudos to you. We hope you found it useful. But if you haven't yet, our free quiz takes less than 6 minutes to complete. It asks a series of questions based on our tried and trusted business accelerators. Think of the Allied Health Biz Quiz as a tool to measure where you're at, what's working, and how to build in what you already have. This quiz isn't about pointing out what's wrong with your business. It's about setting standards, measuring progress, and uncovering areas for improvement. Complete the Allied Health Biz Quiz today. You'll receive your own detailed customized report loaded with practical suggestions to help you get the best business brilliance outcomes. You can find the link in the show notes or on our website at naker.com.au. And now it's back to the conversation.
So we've got the goals and there are tools to help set them, and collaboration is key. Making them functional is key. We need to sort of just really put that medical model in the rear view mirror nowadays. And we can thank the NDIS for that, for a much more social view of disability. I think it could be good to have a bit of a chat next on how you actually design the program of supports, or you design the therapy services collaboratively as well, and that you keep that goal based. How do you see that working?
Look, it adds, I'm just thinking from the administrative point of view, how you could do that really efficiently. You mean on a session by session basis?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of those instances that I've heard about where a business may book in a year's worth of service bookings for a year, and I'm thinking, wow, how do you know what you're going to be doing in September? Well, clearly you don't. If you're going to be working on iterations of goal-driven programs in shorter blocks.
Yes.
But to sort of set a goal for a year. That just doesn't make sense to me.
Oh, no. Actually, I was talking to a fabulous business a couple of days ago, and I think they do like a term-by-term review based on school terms. And I know a lot of our members do base their cycles on school terms, so about every 3 months reviewing. Yeah, unless someone bangs it out of the park and hits the goal in 4 weeks and you are forced into an earlier review.
The PR bit on the goal, right?
Happy days, yeah. but no, I don't think a 12-month long-term goal is fine, but that would be underpinned with a series of shorter-term goals. That would be my clinical approach to that. Thinking about some of our other members, Kathy, who are teaching people to drive, like that might be a 12-month journey, sure, but I'm sure that clinically, although that's not my skill set, and trust me, having taught two children to drive, I don't want it to ever be my skill set. that long-term goal would be underpinned by a series of shorter-term goals as the person makes their way towards independent driving. So, yeah, that absolutely makes sense. In having those conversations, revisiting conversations with the client is absolutely essential to make sure you're both on the same page. Now, this feeds obviously into your other systems in your business in terms of client satisfaction, or client delight is your word, Kathy, which I really love. Yes. And we're trying to delight the government as well along the way, but clients in our team, of course, our very first people that we want to be delighted in our business all the time. And I think this is a really good tool.
A while ago, I used to do a lot of work with a wonderful special educator, and she had worked in a range of schools, and we'd met in all of these schools, and then things sort of changed up and she was doing some other sort of work. But what blew my mind was the level of evaluation that her and her teams had to every single session. So the micro planning, the goal-driven micro planning that went into every single session and the review afterwards, I've never seen anything like it. But the outcome for the clients was mind-blowing.
Okay.
Because there was so much structure in it. And it's not that I'm particularly prescribing that. I just saw a goal-driven program that had measurement built in. Mm-hmm. Week after week after week after week. And so when the time comes, whether it's the end of term or end of plan and you've got to write reviews, if you're running continuous evaluation, and even if we bring in that feedback idea that you just mentioned and continuous feedback, you get to the end and you have a data set, for want of a better word. You have a mix of anecdotal and you have a mix of some numbers and some data that proving what you've spent or proving what has been invested in time and resources,
yep,
you're in a much better spot to be able to prove that what you're doing is working. And if it's not working, you've got your eyes on it and you can change it up.
Absolutely. I can just sort of feel our listeners bristling about how much additional work and potentially non-face-to-face work mm-hmm. that might entail, unless you really integrated it well so that your measurements were happening online as you were delivering your intervention.
There's merit in that, though, because then everybody in the room knows what they're in the room for.
I don't disagree.
Mm.
Wow, that's given me a different perspective again on goal driven. Like that's intensive. Mm. Yeah. Hmm. Anyone want to let us know if you're now thinking about implementing that?
Yeah, and it's not that we're saying this is the best way to do it, but I guess the point of this podcast, I don't even know what time we started. I don't know if we've been here for 20 minutes or 2 hours. It's about just creating some thinking and just getting people, getting clinicians and getting business owners thinking about some rigor, if you like. We could call it clinical governance. We could call it clinical rigor. It's almost micro research, you know, every 12-week block or whatever you're doing. In the event that maybe not too far down the track, more rigor is required.
Yeah, I think it's not too far down the track mm. where more rigor will be required. What that looks like, we don't know, but that NDIS review in the word outcome, what's meant, it just was just about on every page of that massive document.
Was this the one that was 228 times? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, and given that the NDIS is now the predominant funding for many of our allied health businesses, it's just going to make sense to build it into all of your practice, whether your clients are NDIS funded or not.
Yeah. It seems to be, before I go into that, you and I have been talking about proven outcome measures for years,
mm-hmm.
years and years. And I think we're both a bit astounded that they're not with us yet. Had government have changed a while back, maybe it might have, who knows. But I think we're getting a bit of a warning on it.
We've definitely got a warning. As we said earlier in the podcast, Kathy, it's good governance anyway. It's ethical to be demonstrating that the money that people are spending with you is delivering value. So why not just make a start on it, even if you just bite off a small piece to start with, and we'll start moving in that direction and wait for what no doubt NDIA will have a very set way of wanting us to do this. so it's a bit of watch this space, but having been through this transformation when I was with Cerebral Palsy Alliance, it was definitely a change management process. So I don't think we can underestimate the shift that might be required and the support our teams might need to make this move. Mm-hmm. Make sure it's well thought out and planned, and support your teams through a shift to consistent goal setting and outcome measurement through a really considered change management process.
Yeah, yeah. The businesses that I have seen that have been chipping away at this for years would absolutely support what you just said, but they would also say that it is so worth it at the end that they can say 80% of our clients have achieved, you know, 90% of their goals within the timeframes and the rest of it. And they've got a phenomenal mindset around it, but a phenomenal data set as well that could be used in all sorts of ways. I think if I was a clinician wanting to go and work in a business, I'd want to know how happy the clients are. I'd want to know about the outcomes the clients get. I'd want to know a bit about how the therapy happens. And mm-hmm. so some of this sort of also sits in your recruitment and your retention piece as well, because I think it's really important that clinicians and customer service team have visibility about how effective the business is with changing people's lives.
I agree. And now that we know what the workforce situation is, what it is, right? So we are in heavy competition for talent right now. This is imagine the tool you've got at your disposal for recruitment if you can demonstrate the clinical standard that your practice upholds and can prove it.
Yeah, yeah, proven outcomes. So it could be a measure that I know you are very, very awesome, Chantelle, at talking about risk, but this is actually risk mitigating measure as well, that you have tools and you have tools and mindset and skills and confidence in place to prove client outcomes, so that ensures that clients are happy and delighted and coming back, and that clients have ongoing funding. But you've also got a clinical crew that are engaged with this process and see the value and the purpose-driven productivity, as we like to call it.
Surely there'd be some underpinning to professional development here too, Kathy, when people identify areas that they might be struggling to meet those client goals. They might seek out a bit of extra supervision and maybe a little bit of training. It might help highlight those little gaps that we all have hiding there in our own clinical skills. I can see just only benefit to this.
Yeah, yeah. In business, there's a concept called critical drivers, and interestingly enough, it's about setting a goal or setting a standard and then looking at all of the things that people do to ensure that that standard happens or a particular result happens. So I'm just going to make this up. I don't know how this is going to work out, but bear with me. And so if you have a clinical standard that, you know, 80% of your clients achieve goals, then one of the critical drivers is the goal setting. Another mm-hmm. critical driver is the goal, is collaborative functional goals and goal-driven programs and measurement, and that's one. But you can have a standard that you want X amount of employee retention as well. Yes. And so your goal setting and your clinical governance can be a critical driver for that. So we're, and, you know, profitable performance as well. Who'd have thought that, mm-hmm. you know, the quality and the outcome measures of your clinical services are going to determine your profitability? And I think a lot of allied health business owners think that I don't want to use the word selling because that just doesn't sound right, but I'm only halfway through my coffee and I haven't got a better word. You're a speechy. Like, I think a lot of businesses think they're selling therapy, but they're actually not. They're actually selling, and they're actually providing. What they provide is life-changing, is outcomes. Mm-hmm. Therapy is just the vehicle for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What they're selling is a better life for somebody.
Yeah.
And the life that somebody wants, you know, to the best of your ability. And that's Yeah, that's absolutely what they're selling. Do you think they're marketing that? That's a whole other conversation.
Oh, no, don't do that. We'll save that little gem.
This is how Kathy and I kill 3 days at a time going down these rabbit holes.
Yeah. Chantel, we haven't seen her since Tuesday. Okay. That's out of the media. All righty. How do we summarize this? Goals are good.
Well, look, that's the KISS method, isn't it?
Yeah.
We summarize, we say that outcome measurement's coming. We need to get our heads around it. However, let's not view this as a government mandated process. Let's view this as something that is going to be enormously beneficial for your team, your clients, and your business. How's that?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Glad we didn't stick to our structure.
Yeah, there's no negatives here. It's just time to put our heads down and learn how to do it. Yeah, get those change management plans in place so that you know you've got all your milestones set out and your long-term game plan well and truly documented, and start setting some good goals and measuring.
Let's just leave it there. Good chat.
Yeah, great chat. Always a great chat.
All right, so your worst fears have come true. We're back. What we realized when we hit stop was there was just some really good stuff that we forgot to say. And that is that you said it, Chantel, it's your wisdom.
Oh, I don't know that it is. I think it's shared wisdom. We just talked about the separation, these are your words actually, between functional goals and measurable goals.
Yeah.
And finding the balance there can be challenging. So don't stress if it's taking your team a little bit of time to learn how to do this. It will take time, and you need to build that time into change management plan, whether it's through peer support and just peer learning and, you know, writing a goal, swapping it with someone to evaluate and, you know, feedback and just do that really straightforward, easy work within your own team, or accessing some professional development around it. We probably made it sound really easy, we realized, but had both of us having done this work, we just want to acknowledge that setting really good measurable goals is actually takes a bit of practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And that we weren't always good at it.
No, absolutely not. And that we probably weren't trained that well at uni. So any new grads want to get in touch and tell us how well you're trained now on setting great measurable goals?
Yeah, I love the concept. Well, I embrace the concept that the next generation of clinicians really arrive on the planet to teach up. It's really important.
Really important.
I've had another thought. I better stop having these thoughts. I've had another thought, and it was something that you said around the assessment tools as well, that a lot of the standardized assessment tools are pretty medically and technically, and they're not often great to set the scene for functional goals. And so what we've all been a bit challenged by is that where are the good, efficient, practical, functional tools? There's a couple around. Not everyone likes them, understandably, but they may support you better with some goal setting along with some of those other tools that we talked about. But here was my thought. I'm not a researcher, heads up, but I do remember reading up and realizing that some of the standardized assessment tools weren't designed to be test retest tools.
Well, a lot of them actually are not valid if you retest. Yeah,
exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah. I'm just giving me nightmares in advance, Kathy, about I detest standardized assessments.
I should have been given you a trigger warning on that.
I know, you should have. Yeah, Speech Pathology Australia listening, but I avoid them. Unless I absolutely have to do one and it's usually only for a funding report. It's the only reason I would engage in those kind of assessments. I mean, and then just a little caveat on that, because I support people with disability, most of them aren't built for that purpose. So I find the results, I just question whether the results are even valid. So I would resort always to more functional-based assessments wherever possible, yeah.
Are we done?
But you know what? A really good conversation with a client can get you a really long way, and some good observation in natural environment can get you a long way in functional goal setting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Are we done? Is this it? Is this really it?
The end? I'm not making any promises.
All righty. Let's just goodbye. Good luck.
Yeah. See you all soon.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.